Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're back for part two of the discussion of the defense. Joining us is 105.7's Ed Norris. Ed, how you doing?
Doing all right. Doing all right, actually. Talking Ravens after a big win. I'm always happy.
Yeah, it is. It's always a total different tenor to the week. Maria and I have to do a lot of work to put together the numbers and put together the analysis of this. And we really appreciate it a lot more when it's fun to do. We talked about a lot of things in the first episode. We do want to highlight that. So, folks, if you haven't listened to it, please go back. We talked about some of the seeming negativity relative to this team, despite the fact this is a hell of a team with a hell of a quarterback that certainly has almost as good a chance of anyone to win the Super Bowl this year. Certainly better than at least 28 other teams who would love to be in the Ravens' current position. And yet there seems to be so much negativity. I mean, a thing like the penalties, which is, you know, a legitimate reason for concern. I'm not sure that has the kind of impact that all the Ravens' advantages have in a typical way. We talked a little bit about the DeVoe ratings. The Ravens are back at the top of those. A lot of the shuffling done at inside linebacker. So we went through that in some degree in terms of not being able to find a spot for Trenton Simpson. Lots of stuff about packages and so lots of stuff about, yeah, they did play a pretty bad football team in the New York Giants.
You can't avoid that. They did play a bad football team, but the play was in front of you. They had them off a bye. They've always been successful at the bye. Harbaugh's record is pretty impressive. If it's not the best in the NFL, it's second best coming off a bye. So he has them always prepared. And they were prepared yesterday. They played a really impressive game. The score was one thing. You beat somebody by three touchdowns in the NFL. You know, that's a curb stomp.
Let me turn that question around. Is if the Ravens played the way they did yesterday, including the pluses and the minuses, how many of the NFL's 32 teams do they beat playing like that?
Most of them. Yeah. They still beat most of them.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think of who they don't beat, and I'm not sure they don't beat Buffalo playing the way they did yesterday. Well, I'm not sure they Buffalo don't earlier. Beat Kansas City.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they just boat raised Buffalo when the defense wasn't playing well. They had a field day with them. So they played Buffalo. They beat them soundly. They beat the Broncos the same way. They beat the Chargers. They beat really good teams this year. They should have beat the Chiefs in week one. Right. I hate the people they dwell on. Yeah, but they lost to the Raiders. And, you know, I know. Happens. It does happen in the NFL. You can't go by that. They've beaten some really quality teams this year.
It's been a long time since they've lost to a team by two scores. And I don't remember actually the last time it happened. I know Buffalo did have a longer streak that went on for about 3 years until the Ravens trashed them 35-10.
Yeah.
But, it's just a good indication. And it's nice when your football team occasionally loses a close game, even if it's to a bad team. I'm not, those are hurtful losses, but if you occasionally lose a close game and you win some games close and you win some games by a lot, that's a good combination of possible outcomes to have.
Yeah, it is. And you know, and you want to see that good teams beat the teams they're supposed to, like the Ravens did yesterday. You know, you want to step up. You don't want to play down to the level of your competition, because that's been a criticism of them sometimes. They did not do that. They did exactly what you expect them to do. They were a superior opponent. They played like it. The Giants didn't have – they were never in that game. They weren't in the game because the Ravens let them be in the game at some points when they're getting, you know, penalized four times on one drive. They did exactly what you'd hope they do.
I want to apply a little bit of math to that, because the Ravens were about a 91% chance to win this game. And this was the most extreme spread, I think, of the type I'm about to discuss. The Ravens have been, during the John Harbaugh era, an 11-plus point favorite 26 times, and their record is 26-0 in those games. They also were 6-0 under Billick, so it's 32 now, town, nine times as a team.
Where'd you go?
These things do happen occasionally.
Oh, there you are.
I dropped the calculator on my keyboard and left the studio temporarily. Anyway, I hope I didn't leave Ed cursing there, but we're not going to try and edit it out, because that's part of the Saturday Night Live. We don't do that. So anyway, the mathematical point I wanted to make is that they had a 91% chance to win this game as a 16.5 point favorite or 17 point favorite, whatever they ended up being at the beginning of this game. That's higher by a substantial amount than they had in most of the other games during this 26-0 streak by Harbaugh. But let's assume that it was 86 or 87% on average. If you take an 87% chance, and you wonder what's the probability of winning 26 consecutive games with that, it's 2.7%.
Really?
Yeah. And anyone who's been at a craps table knows how hard it is to go 27 consecutive rolls without rolling. So apply that kind of knowledge to it, because that's an 83 and a third percent chance to avoid that. It's very difficult to have the kind of record that Harbaugh has. And I think it's one of the testaments to him as a coach, is he can get his players up to play any time of day or night. I think if they needed to play a game at 3 a.m, and Harbaugh told them, would figure out how to get them ready at that time. And the other is that they hit the cripple after buys, and they're very effective playing against teams with a prohibitive favorite and not get away.
I'm glad you brought up Harbaugh, because one of the things that really just rubs me the wrong way is that the nonstop criticism of him and people calling for his job. And like, do you realize what a good coach he is? Like, I just marvel at the fan that they'll call as they call in and say, he's got to go, he's got to go. And like, okay, who would you rather have? Give me, stop predicting floods, build me an ark here. Who do you want? and they don't come up with anybody. And it's like, I just think people are either they don't understand the game that well, or they just have this thing where he's been around such a long time, they want to change. But this team was in the AFC Championship last year. It may be there again this year. Like, that is a credit to the coach. Yep. I don't know what people want. I really don't.
There's 26 teams out there who – actually, there might be 29 teams out there who want to fire their coach and hire a coach like Harbaugh.
Yeah.
And that's even at his age. You know, but I guess I can understand the dynasty building of wanting to try and move too quickly onto a coach like McDonald to give him the job. And I also kind of understand the notion of having a guy who's responsible for one side of the football, although I think there are inherent dangers with that, by the way. Because once you're responsible for the offense or the defense, in addition to your head coaching responsibilities, you might have to turn your back on the field to do so. And we've seen that occasionally happen, where Belichick's having to be over yelling at a defense because he was unhappy about the way it's performing. Now, he has other assistant coaches I think he trusts, but you don't want your head coach taking his eyes off the field. I think it is kind of nice to have a CEO in that position who has a couple trusted vice presidents that do the job.
And that's the way it's supposed to be. And that's one of the things I think the callers miss, or the fans miss, where they're like, well, he was a special teams coach, he has no experience. He's the CEO of the team. if you've ever run anything, you would understand this, where, you know, I run three organizations in my career. You have to delegate. You have to hire really good people to do their mm-hmm. job. If they don't, you replace them. But that's how it goes. I don't want Harbaugh, you know, micromanaging the offense.
It's the easiest path to failure. Micromanagement, the easiest path to failure.
Yeah. And I just think people just don't understand that. And they're like, and I don't know who they're looking at. Like, who do you look at in the NFL who is calling plays on the offense or defense and the head coach who is wildly successful? I don't get it.
The one that's coming up right now, and it's, I think it's largely driven by the Hard Knocks show they have out right now, is Tomlin. And if you really had I'll just say the mathematician's view of Tomlin is not particularly positive. He's the most cowardly coach in the NFL in terms of going for it on fourth and one, mm-hmm. and cowardly punts is a category. I mean, it's something that you really don't want to be pegged with that, but he's an old school thinker in terms of, yeah. doing that. And frankly, the Steelers have not been very good about embracing analytics the way the Ravens have.
I know. And I just find that odd in this day and age, because I know they had the same problem with our baseball team for a long time. Mm-hmm. And look what happened when you bring in analytics now. Now they're winning division, going to the playoffs. The same thing in football. Like, and that's why, you know, when they question, you know, some of these Harbaugh with his fourth and whatever, his fourth down attempts, when you look at the math that goes into it, no, it's in his favor. It's absolutely in his favor to do this. And
the fourth and one from the 16 in particular, I think you might be referring to. Yeah.
Yeah. I just think, you know, no, he's going by what is probably going to, or the probability that it's going to be successful. And more often than not, it is. And they seem to forget about all the ones that are successful by being aggressive.
The problem is people are always results driven, and they take a punt as a zero. But if you win, you don't get a plus one. You only get you get a minus four if you lose, kind of thing.
Yeah.
From missing that kind of a play. Oh, well, at some point, it's been so much Harbaugh Tomlin discussion and so much, anti-negativity. I feel like I've got a badminton racket and you're just having to hit these shuttlecocks all over the place to get rid of them, kind of thing. Cause it's so silly, but I'm going to give up on trying to educate people on this particular thing. Cause I don't get it. I think it's a lot of grass is greener. And I also know that the Steelers have a large component of their fan base who wants to get rid of Tomlin.
Just absolutely.
The
way that, yeah. It's every city. And frankly, if Harbaugh was let go, or Tomlin, but if Harbaugh was actually let go, he'd have a job before he'd get to his car in the parking lot. So, I mean, this is just a silly conversation to keep having.
Yeah. That's a great point. And Greg Roman, they wanted to get rid of him. And it was probably about a good time to move on from Greg Roman, given where the Ravens were and whatnot. So there was something to be gained. And they've still maintained a lot of the institutional knowledge from the Greg Roman era of how right. they run the football and what they do. So from that perspective, I can understand moving on, why it was the right decision. But Greg Roman didn't have any problem finding a new job.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the pass rush a little bit. We talked just briefly about it in the first show, but I'm going to go through some other numbers here. The Ravens allowed 6 ample time and space opportunities. That's only 15% of the time to the DeVito Boyle combination. I'm not going to refer to them DeVito-Toyle or whatever they might be. But those two guys, I don't want to keep having to say both of their names. So just, I'm always referring to the pair of Giants quarterbacks. 6 ATS opportunities and 17 pressures in this game. And 17 pressures is a decent percentage of the time. 17 out of 40 is, I have it wrong here, it's 43% of the time. That's a very good pressure rate, by the way, but it's an outstanding pressure rate when you take out the ball out quick. And the ball out quick was what that Giants offense was all centered around. Get it out quick, slants, outside, running backs, whatever you want to do, but just get it out of DeVito and Boyle's hands.
Yeah, which is smart on their part because, you know, get it out quickly, avoid the rush, and, you know, you don't have a very talented team. So the more you can actually go up tempo, get the ball out quickly, and hopefully, you know, catch the Ravens, you know, before they can get into your backfield or set up. I get it. Worked for them a little bit, but didn't work very, very well in the end. And the Ravens, Van Noy's still having a good season. I think people forget about him sometimes. They looked at last season. Well, he had a rebirth here. You know, I think the other outside guys have come around as well. I just think their pass rush is better than people think, again, because the sack numbers aren't there, but they're not lacking in sacks this year. And some of the teams that have really good sack numbers, like the Giants, just are terrible teams. So it's just not the, you know, the answer to everything.
I wanted to check and see where they are in the, I mean, they're in the top five in sacks, right? Yeah. Still. So let's see. Yeah, the Ravens are third with 44 sacks.
Yeah. And I think that's lost on people though.
Yeah.
Honestly, because no one talks about it, you know, and they do get a lot of pressure and they have a great sack numbers. And who do you, if you have the numbers in front of you, I don't put you on the spot there, but like who's number one this year, right?
Denver,
now?
449. Denver, Houston, the Giants. 45. Yeah.
Okay. And that's the
and
team
the Giants are actually there. Fifth with 41.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd take the Ravens over any of those teams.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's talk a little bit more about this, though. What was nice about it was the uniform outcome, regardless of whether ample time and space existed or not. I'll tell you why that's important here. Six plays with ample time and space. Now, normally you should throw for about 8.5 yards on such plays. The Giants threw for 4.7. So they came up about 23 yards short of standard. Now, that's saying some nice things about the secondary and the coverage unit behind. The pass rush created an ample time and space situation, which is bad. It's like a lot of things where you create a bad situation. But then the coverage unit got him out of it by about 23 plus yards net-wise there. Then the ball out quick 17 times, 77 yards, 4.5 yards per play. That's about a yard and a half short of the average he wants, about 26 yards above the standard for the defense. So far, the defense for the first two categories is 49 yards ahead. And they lost a little bit on pressure, where they also gave up 4.5 yards a play on 17 plays. But the standard is about 3.5 yards a play on such plays, that your sacks are rolled into that. So your net yards tend to be lower, more incompletions, probably more turnovers as well, although I haven't studied that directly. But they're about 17 yards below expectation on that group. So overall, plus 32, 213 expected yards. Sorry, 213 actually. Sorry, 181 actual yards less 213 expected yards for a minus 32 for the game. So really good job by the secondary from that perspective. Now, we did talk in the first show that penalties obviously reverse a lot of that.
They do. They kill you. And they had some really that whole drive where the Giants had like three first and goal attempts because the Ravens penalties were just preposterous. And eventually they put it into the end. And I got to say, I was actually relieved when they finally scored, because I was getting so angry at watching them continually give them new life. I said, good, it's done. Let's move on. Let's, you know, give them one. Let's go. But it was terrible.
The game that reminded me of was that miserable 2005 loss at Detroit when they had 22 penalties in the game. And they had, I think they had one time where they had consecutive four down stops inside the 10. And each time on fourth down, they gave them a new first down.
Yeah.
And it's just what the hell kind of thing.
Stop.
And that wasn't the game. It was actually that New England game that Bart Scott threw the flag into the stands.
Oh, yeah. I remember that now.
But I felt that way about that game.
Yeah.
by the way, if you didn't listen to that first episode, go back, because there's a lot of references to 1960s and 1970s football from Ed in particular about players like Paul Krause and others who are just very interesting. So if you're a fan of old-time football, definitely worth taking a listen. Let's talk a little bit more about Orr, though, in terms of numbers in this game. And this was kind of interesting because Orr has not been a numbers guy. He's not rushed five very often. Now, Dean Pease is looking over his shoulder. We don't know to what degree. Dean Pease is also a guy who did not like to rush five very often. Would vary it by team. And we're seeing Orr in this game with some very green quarterbacks rushed five plus on 33% of snaps, which is the first time he's, I think that's the highest he's been this year, but there may have been one other game that was higher. And the other thing he had is tons of deception that we're going to get into in a moment.
Yeah. And that's something that's very important, because, you know, this is the NFL. If they can predict what you're going to do, they're going to light you on fire. Mm-hmm. And you need to be deceptive when you're doing the things you're doing, stunts, blitzes, twists, all those things. And frankly, I got to say, I mean, I like Dean Pease as a human being. I was not happy when they brought him back, because I don't like that brand of football. Yeah. Prevent defense, not very aggressive, bend, but don't break. I liked, you know, the McDonald's version much better. And I was hoping that would not happen here. So I was happy to see they're still putting pressure on it and, you know, coming the way they did.
We talk about on this show all the time that the value of variance generally accrues to the defense. Offense wants low variance, because if you look at offensive yards per play, if you're the Baltimore Ravens, you get 6.9 yards per offensive play. you'd love to get 6.9 yards every offensive play if you had a chance. Yeah. So, you know, a zero variance offense is perfect. But if your defense, you really have to get penalties. You have to get big stops. You have to get sacks. You have to get consecutive incompletions in order to get the other team off the field. And you know, basically, all things that you can do to create variance are very important. And it's very important for teams to seek that out, even in situations where they might not normally. It might seem normal to you know, up seven in the last 2 minutes of a game to try and like play a little off and not try and do anything. I mean, that's exactly the time you really need to be going after the quarterback to get him off the field, because it's four down football. It's that much harder to get that team off the field.
Yeah. It's that much harder when you're kicking yourself in the behind with, you know, penalized, yep, getting these unnecessary penalties when you've done such a good job of keeping this, you know, keeping your defense off the field by, you know, stopping them. And you keep new life over and over and over. I was just really penalized yesterday. They're the most penalized team in the NFL. So it's just hard to believe they're successful.
It is an unusual position to be in, certainly. But it shows you still can be a good football team with a ton of penalties. Because, hey, this is the example right here. Very briefly, four-man rush, 26 times, 4.2 yards per play. They had all three of their sacks, by the way, with a four-man rush. Tremendous job the Ravens are doing this year, by the way, getting home with a four-man rush. Been very impressive. Last year was too. Five-man rush, 12 times. They didn't get any sacks, but 5.7 yards per play. And a six-man rush, one time for 5 yards. They did also have a three-man rush, one time for 0 yards. So the simple point of this is everything worked yesterday in terms of the pass rush by numbers. There wasn't any number there that I pick and say, you can't live with that. You can live with all those numbers.
Yeah. But if you could pressure with a four-man rush, you're going to win a lot of football games.
Oh yeah.
Because if people, you know, if you look at recent history, that's how the Buccaneers beat the Chiefs, because the Bucs were able to get pressure with just four. You didn't have to blitz, which means you got seven in coverage and you got four guys putting pressure on. And they beat Pat Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs soundly. I think it was at 31-9 that Super Bowl, something like that.
One-sided.
Yeah, it was a one-sided game, and it was all defense. They just lit them up with, you know, rushing four. And it just shows how effective it can be. If the Ravens get pressure with just four, that's a good sign.
It was definitely a mode for the Rams to be very effective. It was a mode for the 1970s Rams, the 1970s Cowboys, the 1960s and 70s Vikings. I mean, you go back, it's one of the most obvious things you can say about a football team is if you can get pressure rushing four, you pretty much are guaranteed to have a good defense.
Yeah, and all those defenses you mentioned had nicknames because of it.
Yeah,
you go. Seriously, the Fearsome Foursome, Doomsday Defense, Purple People Eaters, they all had nicknames because they had their pass rush was so fierce. It makes a huge difference. That's how you win championships.
Yeah. We did want to talk a little bit about deception. Now, they used 11 off-ball blitzes or called in this game. All singles, by the way. Very high rate for him of 0.28 per play. He hasn't really been up that high for most of the year. Now, they did give up 7.5 yards per play. Now, I've been tracking this recently and noticing that the deception they've used has been at a very low rate, but it's been extremely successful when they've used it, like uniformly successful. They've got all these reports of like 2 and 3 yards per play that they're giving up when they use deception. Mm-hmm. Wasn't nearly this good in a larger sample size this game. And some of it bodes to what you think I alluded to earlier, is if the other team knows what you're going to do, they're going to be able to counter it and whatnot. And that includes obviously things like the blitz and going to a hot read and whatnot. But this is effective. And I think the Ravens, we kind of talked about this in the first show, have done a much better job disguising their off-ball blitzes this time. A lot of people, by the way, will define it differently than I do. Say a blitz is 5+. I'm not saying that. I'm saying a blitz is an off-ball blitz. They're sending a player that's unexpected from off-ball.
Yeah, and that includes cornerbacks and safeties, I'm assuming. Yeah, of course. But again, if you're tipping your hand, the quarterback's going to go for the hot read right in the vacancy you left by blitzing, and that's exactly where they're going to go. So if they know what you're doing, you're going to get lit on fire. And I think doing a much better job of disguising that, which is critical to success.
That's really been Mahomes' trick a lot of the times he's faced the Ravens, is just burning hot reads. But it was true of Roethlisberger too. You know, even as he was losing every little bit of arm strength he had, he was still very effective at being a hot read quarterback. They stunted 6 times in this game, all singles, 4.8 yards per play, no issue with that. And then simulated pressures, they had 7. They were lighting up the simulated pressures in that first half. Don't know if you caught it, but their first 2 pressures of the game were by Humphrey. And The first one, Humphrey came on a 4-4 simulated pressure. Now, here's what that means. That means they rushed four, but they also dropped four from the line of scrimmage to cover. So they dropped, on that play, they dropped Smith, Ardarius Washington, Board, and Van Noy all from the line of scrimmage, and they blitzed Humphrey along with three other players they had at the line of scrimmage and created a pressure by Humphrey that went incomplete. And then the second one, they got another pressure by Humphrey, and that was just a play where Humphrey actually gave himself up before the play had been snapped. So he had already given up where the hot read was going to be before the play, right. So it didn't count as a blitz.
Yeah. All right. Well, I didn't realize that the first one you mentioned that they sent so many guys, but I do remember the play. I didn't realize they had dropped four into coverage and that was it.
Pretty cool. Humphrey actually ran over the left guard and drove him right back. Left guard or center. But one of those two anyway. He drove him right back. Like he was bull rushing him like an edge rusher. I had him got him back a little bit on his toes. And you don't have to be that heavy. You just have to have the good leverage in order
to leverage everything. That's right.
Yeah. Two elements on six plays. Those plays didn't work out so well. 9.7 yards per play. So a little bit larger sample size, and you kind of see some of the reduced value. It's kind of like we talked about targets. If you have too many, probably the ones on the margin are not going to be nearly as good. More contested throws, more other problems that are just not going to be as positive. So the Ravens gave up some yardage on these deceptive pass rushes in this game.
Yeah, well, that's the downside of it. That's going to happen. So, I mean, again, if people see this, they can't point at it and say, see, they're not. No, that's the gamble you take when you do this. Most times it works out in your favor if you're carrying it out properly. Sometimes you lose. I mean, I hate all these trite expressions, but they get paid too the other time.
Yeah.
The other team, and you got to remember that. So sometimes you're going to get burned.
Okay. Stupid games win stupid prizes. You said another one, this one. I was going to say it at the time, but now I forgot already what it was. Now I can't steal it. So we'll have to see if that one comes up again. 13 different Ravens generated a pressure in this game. Van Noy was the only one who had more than two. He had three pressures and one sack. But to have 13 different guys is not only a testament to they're kind of spreading the wealth in terms of where they're bringing the blitz from. It's also a testament that they went very deep onto the bench in this game. So you see a player like Desmond King got a late pressure, for example, in this game. And, he would not in a normal game. There were others too, but anyway, that's a good example.
I think Van Noy deserves a little credit too, because I think, again, he's one of those guys that kind of toils in anonymity. People know he's there, but I don't really think they realize. I think he has 9 sacks this season so far. Mm-hmm. That's a really good season.
Hell of a season.
Yeah, it's a hell of a season. And, he's playing really well. And he's kind of had a rebirth since he's come here. And I hope people appreciate what he's doing.
Let me ask you this. There's been evidence that Lamar Jackson has evolved some as a leader. And they've had problems on both sides of the ball in terms of needing somebody to have a talk with some underperforming players. Deontay Johnson on the offense, big problem. We talked about him in the first show. I don't want to belabor the point. But in terms of the defense, both Eddie Jackson and Marcus Williams have needed talking to. And those are two different conversations. One with a vet min player who has not made a ton of money in the league, or has made some, but not a ton of money in the league. Mm-hmm. And then you have Marcus Williams, who's set for life in terms of his money, does not have any issue with that. And it's maybe a little bit different conversation to have with each. Who's the Ravens leader who could do that? And the reason I'm bringing this up right now is because you just talked about Van Noy. Is he the kind of leader who should be able to go to a player like that and say, this isn't right, man. You got to pick this up.
I don't know if he's the guy. I don't know what his personality is. I've seen him off field, and he seems like he's a smart guy and should be the guy to do it. But I think Roquan would probably be the one, because he gets a little animated with these guys, and you can tell he gets in their faces when they're not performing or they're doing something stupid, a particular lack of effort. So I would assume it's still Roquan, but I think Van Noy would absolutely do that because he is a veteran and he's a smart guy, and it smart matters.
He definitely is smart, and he's also he's got this characteristic about him. I've seen at the podium this year, and he's it's like he's working a crowd. And then I heard he has a background in stand-up comedy.
Oh,
he really wants to do that, but it just the way he like works the reporters when he's at the podium is absolutely hilarious. It's he's very good at it. The other guy that I've liked in a leadership role and I'd like to see even more is Marlon Humphrey.
Yeah, me too. And again, another guy who I don't get enough credit for being tough. People think they remember as a good cover corner. He's a tough guy. you mentioned him running over a guard on a blitz. He's a good tackler. He hits hard. He takes on, you know, blockers who outweigh him by 50 to 100 pounds sometimes. I just think he is definitely one of those guys who can take on a leadership role.
Yeah. I do hope also that he'll move to safety at some point. He's too good a corner to move right now, which is like, it's almost a bad break for the Ravens because they really need a safety like Humphrey.
Yeah.
But if they, I would take this as a second possibility, and I don't know if this is even remotely possible, but I'd love to see a world in which Humphrey and Hamilton were truly interchangeable about.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Who could play free safety and who could play slot corner. If you had that, you'd really have something to keep the opponent guessing. It's kind of like having multiple tight ends on the field for the offense.
Yeah.
How do you deploy against that with your opposing defense? It'd be very difficult.
Yeah. You've seen a lot of premier corners play safety in the second half of their career, end of their career. Rondé Barber, another good example, went from corner to safety. He was real successful with the Bucs, so I could see that happening.
Rod Woodson, and I think that I asked him already this summer, early on when he was at the podium, have you had conversations yet about potentially moving to safety? And he said, have not had the conversations yet, but he always saw his career ending at safety. And so that's good. I don't know how he's, you know, when it's going to feel right to him. I imagine not after a big year like this. If I were Brandon Stevens right now, I'd be doing whatever I could to get to get more versatile in terms of positional usage. I'd be thinking about moving to safety. And he's tight. I just don't know if what he does as a corner is really fixable.
I don't think it is at this point. I mean, you know, when you get to this level, you've played football for a very long time. I'm assuming they played sandlot football and high school football and college football. So you're talking about a good, you know, 10 years before you get to the NFL level. And now he's a veteran. He is who he is right now. He's got flaws in his game. He just does.
All right. Let's jump into some individual player discussion. Who would you like to talk about from the defense on this game?
Ardarius Washington. He's really one of my favorite players on the defense. I like so much about this kid. I like when he came up. I like the fact that you have this undersized guy playing safety, but we talked about Bob Sanders earlier. Not unusual. Tyrann Mathieu is not a big guy either, and a pretty premier safety. And I think he's become one of those guys. And I'm assuming some of the reason he was overlooked because Williams had a pedigree. Guys like that, you're going to take, I think naturally coaches are going to plug them in ahead of you no matter what, because he had a history, he had a good career in New Orleans. But Washington now, since all the other things fell apart, you got one guy getting cut, one guy getting, benched, and now you have Washington in there. The Ravens' defensive fortunes have changed since he's moved back there. And he's seized the opportunity. He had a pick yesterday. He had five tackles yesterday. He had an interception and a pass defense. He's playing good football. He's really playing good football. And I like him a lot. And I'll tell you, I've seen him actually do a good job on receivers much taller than him, particularly when they played the Bengals, which surprised me. Because I saw him actually on Chase a couple of times. I was like, wow, that's a mismatch. But he comported himself well.
Yeah, he's Ferguson. I guess the Bills. Is it Ferguson? Ferguson isn't the Bills guy. Might be a Cowboys guy. I'm trying to think of who he tackled coming downhill, who was a much bigger man than him. And I thought that's a terrific tackle, because that is my big concern, is that he may not have the size to play safety, or worse possibly that he might have just enough size to get hurt playing safety. And, you don't want to see that. Bob Sanders, spent half his career on IR, it seemed like, with what happened to him.
Yeah, sometimes. But sometimes if you see somebody who can take on bigger players, even when I was coaching kids, like the bigger the hit you deliver, the less likely you are getting hurt.
Yeah.
And that's just a fact. And he seems to have that down pretty well, where he delivers a nice blow. He tackles well. And that goes a long way to keeping you healthy in this league.
Yeah, he's been the Ravens' last choice to solve so many problems, and yet he keeps having to re-win his job every year. So last year it was their fourth choice, I think, to play slot corner, and then he won the job, and then he gets hurt in the second game. So that sucked, of course. And then this year, he's got a slot corner position, except that Humphrey and Hamilton are taking so many of those snaps with the combination of those two, being the focal point of his position, but they still can't keep him off the field. He still gets time. Mm-hmm. Mallett comes back. They give snaps to Mallett for some reason over Washington, which I've never gotten. And then they finally move Ardarius to the back end, and he's seeming to be thriving and playing every snap, which is great. But it's been a tough road for him to earn the playing time. But here's my question. Mm-hmm. Would you go this season? It'll be after 3 years. You have a chance for an early signing of Ardarius Washington. And the Ravens have about six or seven of these right now that they can take care of. Linderbaum is a very big one, who's a year early from having to be done. Hamilton's actually 2 years in advance. They still might do it, but they might wait another year with him. Owe is at a point right now, going into his last season, likely, and Travis Jones also. So they got a lot of players to choose from. But does it seem to you like Ardarius Washington might be the kind of player that they try and get on kind of a divisible benefit deal, where player takes less risk, team gets a pretty good deal on the salary?
Yeah, I do. I think they finally have come to appreciate what he brings to the table. And I'd love to see him as a long-term Raven. I think, he'd be a likely candidate. I hope he gets it.
Yeah, me too. I think he would. There's some of the other guys, Travis Jones, I don't know if he'll sign or not. It would be great if he would, but he might be the kind of player that his agent is telling him, don't sign, go for the free agent big box. Yeah. All right, I'll pick a player. Let's talk a little bit about Nate Wiggins, because Nate Wiggins has a seemingly some problems that just continue to show up. An inability to haul in a ball that hits him on some part of his body. It can hit on a leg like it did yesterday. Yeah. Also had a kind of a not good back end of the bracket opportunity to go up high for the football, which he did not make any attempt to make. Now, I'm not 100% sure he could have, leapt to the proper height to get the ball, but he seemed to be in a position where it was his ball or no ball. And it would have been a nice opportunity for him. He's kind of had a loose bracket by the right sideline with Ardarius Washington nearer the quarterback. Ball was thrown a little bit high because of it. And I thought he broke off his own receiver onto the ball. I'm like, if you're going to do that, if you're going to make that great player play to know exactly where the football is going, take a leap forward at least.
Take a leap, yeah. Take it to the high point. That's exactly what you're supposed to do. And it's, yeah, it's been a little frustrating to watch how many times they've either done that where he hasn't taken a leap, or right. just drop balls that hit him, between the numerals. Mm-hmm. We've seen that in our secondary as well. So yeah, it's been some frustrating play back there. I don't quite. And sometimes that's why they're playing defensive back and a wide receiver. So, I get it, but you're still supposed to make those plays.
That is the adage. Who else would you like to talk about?
Maybe Van Noy, who I think is a big veteran presence on his team, and comes here as a stopgap, but it kind of was where, they bring him here because they had no pass rush, very little pass rush. So you bring in a veteran like him, and I think he's done nothing but perform for this team, and I'd perform at a much higher level than I thought they were going to get from him. The fact that at this stage of the season now he's at 9 sacks already, and a ton of pressures. He provides a lot to this Ravens defense, and I don't know how much the fan base appreciates him.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's not clear. I mean, Van Noy, when he came to this team, was really kind of a hybrid, or it was supposed to be kind of a hybrid guy who would be more like a Sam linebacker, more like a Tyus Bowser, who would drop the coverage a lot and provide you value there. And he's done a little bit of that, but not nearly like he had. I mean, he has some huge number of career coverage snaps, like 1,400 or something. It's a really large number. And he's not dropped at all like to that percentage here. He's mostly been just rushing the quarterback. But he's done the job very well. And the Ravens' overall record of signing bargain basement pass rushers has been absolutely remarkable. Yeah. I mean, when you can do it the way they have it, you really question the notion that you have to have such a player in the draft. If you can have the kind of track record they have to get, Justin Houston and Clowney and Van Noy,
yeah,
and Jason really Pierre-Paul, even, who provided you something in the pass rush, yeah, and others. I mean, it's why draft a guy? Why spend your very scarce commodity of draft capital for that?
Yeah, and you see what happened to the Lions. Sometimes they get hurt too. Mm-hmm. One of the best pass rushers in the league. And sadly, he's been out most of the season this year, so that can happen as well. But you're right. Sometimes you don't have to give up your draft capital. If you get lucky and strike on somebody like that, that's fine. But doesn't always work out.
All right. I'm going to want to talk. You know what I'd like to talk about? I'd like to talk about Broderick Washington, because I think yesterday I thought he played a pretty good game. Mm-hmm. And I think it was part of what was happening. We haven't seen the best out of Broderick Washington this year, although I've heard good things from him also in a leadership role. Doesn't really strike me, obviously, as a guy who'd be a leader, in part because you want your best leadership to come from your best players, and that's not really who Broderick is. But in second part, because when he answers a question at the podium, he's almost like he's answering under deposition. They tell you, take 5 seconds, think about your answer, yeah, and then tell people. It's just one of those things that is strange. But anyway, he apparently said some things that were very positive from a leadership perspective. And now he's playing back in position, and he had a very effective game yesterday, I thought, in terms of getting the quarterback in some cases, but also the screen pass where Michael Pierce was having like the slowest pressure ever, inching closer to DeVito, second by second. The reason that was possible was that Washington had diagnosed the screen pass, I think Tracy on the left side, and had him totally walled off. And DeVito's like, I can't get to you. I can't get to you. I can't get to you. And then he had to throw the ball away finally, after it was a very slow pressure.
Yeah, it was a slow pressure, actually. But he played a great game. And I hate to keep going back to Pierce, but I think the fact that they're all back where they're supposed to be, they are truly greater than some of the parts. Some of the parts are greater than the individuals, where they're looking like they used to. And I think there's something that's been missing. I don't know how much people have missed them while they were gone, because they're, kind of faceless on the, when you're down lineman. So I don't know how much people really pay attention to this stuff, but they were missed sorely. And having them back in their positions, they all had a good game. They really did. They played really well yesterday. And I don't think it's just because they played the Giants. I think they're going to have they're going to continue to play this way.
One of the things that I think comes up from time to time is that people don't realize that the Ravens rush isn't really driven by their edge rushers. It's driven by some by scheme. I mean, some by trying to get the cornerbacks coming down, but it's also driven even more than that by having Travis Jones on the inside commanding double teams. And Pierce gives you that second guy who does that on the downs that Travis Jones is not on the field.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you try to block Michael Pierce with one man, do so at your own peril. Same thing goes with Travis Jones. And, you know, you take your chance with Van Noy, with Owe, even trying to block those guys one-on-one before you'll take that chance with Travis Jones. Kind of reminds me of Pernell McPhee in the early teens and how effective and impactful he was.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And the other thing you mentioned that I think is vitally important to this scheme because they don't rely on the edge rushers. You don't have a Bosa. You don't have a Watt. You don't have any of these guys, Miles Garrett. But scheme matters, and the way they mix it up, and if you look at the way it's distributed as well, where they'll come up with, you know, they say the third in the NFL in sacks this year. They don't have anybody with 17 sacks, so they do it by, you know, spreading the responsibility around and feeding everybody, where guys are contributing pretty much throughout the defense, be it blitz packages or guys coming up the middle. Some corner blitzes, safety blitzes. They do a lot of mixing it up, which I think is why they're so successful.
All right. Another player you want to talk about?
Maybe Brett Urban briefly, because I've always liked him. Again, this is somebody I think people totally forget about, but provides a lot of value to the team. And I was happy to see him back in the, you know, in the rotation, and knocked down a pass yesterday. He's just very effective. His size, his height in particular. I think since Calais Campbell, we haven't had someone that tall on the defensive line, and he's that guy now. And I just think he's one of those people that I think people just kind of forget all about. And I hope they don't, because he provides a whole lot of value for this team, particularly in the pass rush, when he tends to get his hands on a lot of footballs coming out of the quarterback's hands.
Great player. In terms of a lot of things, but being a survivor in the NFL is very hard. He brings you a specialist role on the kick blocking team, so he can be out there for that. He's a guy who really gives you value in terms of getting hands up. You got a shorter quarterback in the game, drives him absolutely nuts. You know, it's like being 5'8" and going into the lane and have a, you know, a 7-foot shot blocker in front of you. It's just, you know, you don't want this. I mean, you have to go around him, but it's too many hands to work with. The other thing I've always heard is that, and maybe you have some experience with this, Ed, but that one of the reasons why Chamberlain was not that effective against Bill Russell was that Bill Russell blocked with his left hand. And so it drives a right-handed shooter in particular absolutely bananas to have that happen, as opposed to having a right-on-right matchup.
I didn't know that.
Okay. Well, it's just a kind of a weird thing that I heard from a Celtics fan. So I think I'm sure he's telling it.
You must have heard it from a Celtics fan, because my memory is Chamberlain did a really good job on Russell. And if you look at the statistics, Chamberlain really had the advantage there. If you look at the actual points he put up against him and then things like that.
I'd have to go back and look at that. I mean, Russell is the all-time king of, well, championship rings probably in any sport.
Obviously, yeah. When there were five teams. So, yeah. It's a little distorted. It's like the Montreal Canadiens in the NHL.
Yes.
There were six teams all those years. Yeah. they won a lot of Stanley Cups because there were no other teams until expansion. So.
There you go. All right. Let's move on to the mailbag. Take a few mailbag questions here. And I know we got some good ones. So I'm going to move right over there. And just hit us up at hashtag film study mailbag if you'd like to be on this. Okay. That's an offensive question. Let's see. Okay, here we go. This is from A-Bits, who says, with two safeties inactive yesterday, the Ravens had one of their better special teams / pass defensive games of the year. What are your thoughts with colder weather this month and next on the Ravens activating fewer safeties and more linebackers / defensive linemen? I'll give you first crack at this, and then I have some thoughts on it.
I don't know how you can activate fewer safeties since they have so few on the roster. So I don't know if that's really valid. They don't have any safeties anymore. So, yeah, I don't know. And frankly, it's a really important position to have, because this whole cold, again, this is something I think people just, they have this in their mind of colder weather, are going to run the football. Yeah, not really. If it's not really incredibly windy, if you're not playing in Buffalo or, you know, the Meadowlands, someplace that's really at a windy stadium, they're going to throw the football in December and January.
Yeah, they really have to. And one of the interesting things we didn't talk about was that Bo Braid did not get a chance to play on the back end in this game. And I've kind of felt like all along that he wasn't really a back end split field safety skill set. You know, we saw him play in the preseason a fair amount, and most of his good plays were right up around the line of scrimmage defending the run. That says dime back to me. You know, maybe a guy, man, maybe they trust him this way, maybe they don't even, that you have in a good short zone player who can come downhill, make plays. He could be an option to replace a Board or a Simpson on third down, but I don't think he's at this point a guy the Ravens believe could play on the back end. I think if he was that guy, we absolutely would have seen him in this game yesterday because they still had Stevens on the field at the end of the game, and he certainly could have gotten Braid in at that point.
Yeah, I was surprised because that's when they were putting in people at, you know, to get a look at him. But they did it running back, they did some on defense. Yeah. I was a little surprised as well.
All right, got a question from Brad McGowan here. He says, hey, Ken, two defensive questions. Harrison and Board that much better than Simpson? Are Harrison and Board that much better than Simpson?
I don't know. I'd say yeah right now. I mean, I like Simpson a lot. I've been championing him since he got drafted. There was things I liked about Simpson. I was never a big Patrick Queen fan. I think he was good, but it was never great. You know, I don't think he ever lived up to expectations. And when Simpson came, the fact that he had speed and actually played safety in college as well as linebacker, I thought he was going to really, you know, complement Roquan that much better. Because Roquan's such a good run, you know, he's great. He's just a great linebacker, does everything well. But I thought, you know, his speed would actually complement him and he'd be much better in pass coverage. Right now, I kind of like the way they're mixing up with the platooning the other two.
Yeah, they have some of the linebackers who have a safety background have converted well to the NFL because their skills are portable. So their understanding of the field from the back end and knowing how the patterns are developing from behind them when they play linebacker is still fairly well known. So you'll see Roquan occasionally look to the other side of the field to look for potential crossing routes. I'm not saying all linebackers don't sometimes do this, but if you're Trenton Simpson, you should probably, it's more important to pick up those kind of clues than it is to look at the quarterback and try to figure out where he thinks he's looking on the play. It's really more important to say, hey, those are the threats. When is that guy going to be behind me? If it's a deep over or it's cross behind me. And I have not seen that, unfortunately, from Simpson. By the way, Harrison is even more limited in that regard. He's not a guy who gives you that at all. He is a guy who's a big time thumper.
Yeah.
But the thing that I think they decided in this Giants game, or for this Giants game specifically, was that the Giants did not pose the same sort of passing risk that they presented with Tracy as a runner, and they thought having the thumper maybe was more valuable. So if I'm looking for any kind of a silver line to say that Simpson might be back in a future game, it might just be that it related more to the Giants, what they brought to the table in terms of threats.
Tommy Cutlets is playing quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, what more do you have to say here?
You make gestures if you're like every other NFL player.
Yeah, right, exactly.
This thing, right?
Yeah.
Right. The other question from Brad, let's get to that. What will it take to get Stevens fewer snaps? These PI penalties are killing us. What would it take?
It would take having somebody else to play the position, and right now you don't. I mean, that's the problem. Stevens is, you know, he's not terrible. It's just he struggles with the PIs, for one. And he just, I don't know what it is with him. To me, he doesn't seem to get, like, he's not closing and making up ground because he's getting torched. He seems to run pretty well with people, but just doesn't have any ball awareness. Mm-hmm. And when you don't do that, that's when you end up getting the penalties, because you get entangled with these guys. You're not turning around. You're like right in their face. You're impeding them from catching the football. You're supposed to be turning around, going for it yourself. And that he's not doing. So I don't know how you're going to, but I don't know how you get him fewer snaps right now.
You know, I think there's about three ways it could happen. One is injury. And I'm not talking about to him, although I guess that would do it too. I'm talking about an injury on the back end that would force him into being the second safety. So that's possible. If you're looking for another way, I mean, they could decide Tre'Davious White is recovered enough from his injuries that he can outplay Stevens. They're getting rotational play in there, but White's still not taking the preponderance of snaps. So I don't think we're approaching that at a particularly quick rate like we did with Simpson and, you know, the shift to mm-hmm. him and Board alternating series seemed to accelerate. And then possibly number three, I have forgotten right now because I lose in my mind here at this age, but I had a third possibility and it will come back to me.
All right.
All right. I'll think of it when I do on one of these next questions, no doubt. Let's go into another question here. This is from Troy McClure. Okay. From such films as this year reminds me a lot of 2012. Got so close the year before. Everyone's saying our team this year isn't nearly as good as last year. Kind of flying under the radar these last couple of weeks of the year. Hopefully one home playoff game and a great run to the Super Bowl. Comments are fine, as always. By the way, I think you're right. I think there is a chance of that. That 2012 team was nowhere near as good as any of the other first five Harbaugh years. And I mean nowhere near as good. If you look at DeVoe, they were like the 12th best team in the NFL. So they made a run, and I think this team is infinitely more equipped to do so.
Yeah, definitely. But I don't think this team is as good as last year's team. I think last year's roster was the best team in the NFL, hands down, and they still didn't get it done. So you can't, you know, the game wasn't played on paper. Because that was the best roster I've ever seen in my whole life here with the Ravens.
It was probably better than the 2000 and 2019 teams, which is really saying something. 2006 team. I mean, you know, some of the great ones. I did hear something really interesting said that immediately I thought this is very well put, is that fans want the playoffs to be a referendum on which team is best. And it's just not that. There's a lot of variance and risks associated with these individual one game tournament things. The same things that make you thrilled with March Madness are exactly what makes the NFL playoffs so exciting. That the possibility of upsets between, you know, teams that are even more closely matched than they are during the season, when you can have plenty of 1 versus 32 upset risk. It's a very different world.
It's a very different world. A lot of different things happen. You look at some of the real disappointing losses we've had in the playoffs. The one against the Titans, where they're trailing by 8 at the half, and the coaching staff decides they're behind by 24 and abandons everything they do well, and they, you know, lose in that game. And that loss to the Bills, you know, where the offensive line just, it looked like they never played the game before, and nothing was going right in that game. So you don't know. I mean, they're human beings. Sometimes they have bad days, and sometimes bad coaching decisions or bad, you know, players have an off day, and the best team doesn't always win.
All right. Really good stuff. Okay. Got one more here. This is from Kid Rock 20. He says, is Pierce at a healthy playing weight?
not if you ask his doctor, but I mean, no, that's not a healthy weight for anybody, but it seems to be okay with him. I mean, I think he got bigger looking at him, if it's possible.
He looks absolutely huge. He said, I can't recall seeing a player look like that. I know he's always played very heavy, but man, looked like he hit a Thanksgiving turkey under that jersey.
That was something.
All right. Outstanding. That'll do it. If you care to do a 3-2-1 on the MVPs defensively from this game, would you be prepared to do that?
What?
A 3-1 countdown on your defensive MVPs from this game. Oof. You can just give me your third and I'll name my third, and then we can kind of work through this. If you're not, I'll just list my third three and we'll move from there.
Yeah, why don't you just list your three? I'd have to think about that for a minute.
I'll do it. So, okay. My number three defensive MVP of this game is Roquan Smith. Outstanding cleanup job. And that's what Roquan is needed to do. Get to the spot, make tackles for sure, but also be the guy who takes people down when other people miss tackles. There were some missed tackles in this game. Roquan did a good job with those. Number two player, Michael Pierce, had a great game individually for this, but what this means for the Ravens defense is absolutely enormous. Very positive on what he'll do. I think we said enough already about him. Number one player, Ardarius Washington. The late interception was just the icing on a cake on a really great game. Had some great plays knifing into the backfield against the run, I thought were really impressive. So some good play from Ardarius. Did lose the one receiver. I think it might have been Wendell Robinson when he fell down by the right sideline as he was rotating in. But otherwise, very good game for Ardarius. And, you know, just he's getting the job done at this point of safety.
He'd be my number one. I had him. He was my – I gave him the game ball on the show after, you know, when we did Monday Morning Quarterback because I thought he had an outstanding game.
Absolutely. All right. Great talking football with you, Ed. I appreciate you taking a couple hours out of your busy day to do this. I know you've got a lot of things going on in your life. Anything you want to talk about, Big Bad Morning Show or guests you've got coming up maybe this week?
Other than you, I don't know who's coming on this week, actually. Honestly, I really don't know. But no, it's going to be – I just think it's still a week, and it's always a fun week for us. No matter, and this one means even more than usual. You know, we've had sometimes these games always seem to mean a lot with the Steelers just because of the rivalry. But this could be for the division title. So I'm just pretty excited about this as we ramp up for Saturday's game.
Do you get any troll baiting calls from Pittsburgh calling to the?
Oh sure, of course we do.
Okay,
yeah, forget the call. You should read the text line. That's something. That's something.
I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Big Fan with Patton Oswalt.
No.
Okay, great movie, by the way. If you get a chance to watch it, it's about a guy who basically gets in this battle he's a Giants fan, gets in this battle with an Eagles fan who calls into the radio station that he listens to, and he has a friend who's even more of a doofus than he is. He's planning to make these calls. He has them all written in exactly what he's going to say. And they go to the Giants games, but they don't go into the Giants games. They actually like sit out in the parking lot and watch them on TV there. But that's part of the fan experience. But anyway, it's a very good movie. Really, really well done. It's funny. Anyway, I appreciate you coming on, Ed. Other folks out there, anything you do for the show in order to pass the word of mouth along is great. If you want to write a 5-star 50-word review, that's also fantastic. Since we'll have the game on Christmas against the Texans, there will be an opportunity for a film study short or two. Get your ideas into me, and I'll get right back to you about morphing that into about a 20 or 25-minute episode where we can talk about your favorite topic. Ed, thanks again for joining me.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.